Sidelined USA presents Sideline Stories. We interview athletes who could no longer participate in their sport anymore due to current injury, health condition, concussion risk. We talk about their stories. What have they been through? What was their journey like? What was it like to step away from their greatest passions? So we do this all to start a conversation about what happens when an athlete has to step away from their sport due to circumstances that are outside of their control. The reality is, although it may seem like the end of an era, it can be the beginning of another.
Every aspect of my life goes back to that moment in time and the inability to play soccer.
And it was something similar to me losing a loved one.
When I was told I couldn't play anymore, it's like my identity was taken away from me.
It was like if we tell people that we're sad or we're depressed, then we're gonna be looked at as weak and unable to perform.
And if it weren't for this injury, I don't know that I would be where I'm at personally with finding my value in my being instead of what I'm doing. The courageous route is to confront how you're feeling and to be honest about it.
Welcome to another episode of Sideline Stories. This is Christine Penalto from Sideline USA, a nonprofit specifically geared towards supporting athletes who've been forced to discontinue competing due to medical reasons. Today, I have with me a former performing arts athlete, Chrissy Papetti. Chrissy, welcome to the show. Tell us a little bit about your background in dance and also what you do currently.
Thanks so much, Christine, for having me. I'm really honored to be on. Sure, I would love to tell you a little bit about my background. So I was dancing since I was two, since I pretty much could walk. I started dancing locally in New Jersey and in the area. And slowly that started to grow into, a huge passion. So I became very competitive, started to get really serious about it in middle school. And so I competed at a studio in the region and went all over nationally. I competed internationally at the World Tap Championships. I did all sorts of styles, tap, jazz, hip hop, ballet, modern, all of it, and really fell in love mostly with tap. But it really became so much a part of me all throughout growing up. I played field hockey at the same time during high school, so you could imagine. Yeah, trying to balance field hockey at high school and then going to dance. I would literally have school from early morning to 2. I would go to field hockey practice from 2:30 to 5, and then I would drive up and do dance from 5:30 to 10 p.m. Wow. And that was just my life.
That's incredible.
I loved being a part of a team, which I got in both dance and field hockey, but there's just something about that kind of competitive athletic sport that's just like nothing else. And so I loved being a part of that while I was also training with dance. But that was sort of kind of how I grew up, and it just seemed like a natural fit to pursue dance after high school. So I ended up going to college for dance, and I majored in it, and I was also on the dance team at Michigan, the University of Michigan. So that's kind of my background. Nice. As a whole.
Yeah. Tell us, so I know you're not doing that currently. We'll talk about that in a minute, but go ahead and tell us what you do currently.
Sure. So I am a licensed occupational therapist turned life and mind redesign coach. So I still operate as an OT, but I've sort of melded the field of OT with coaching and mindset work and to become a life and mind redesign coach. And so that's sort of what I'm doing today. And I love it. I went to grad school to get my master's in OT, and now I'm working with sideline athletes and performers and high achievers on, redesigning their lifestyle after they get sidelined, which I know we'll get more into in a bit, but that's what I'm doing today.
Right. Yes. Which is awesome. And you also recently joined the Sideline USA Advisory Board to help us really reach out better to performing arts athletes and to understand issues that are specific perhaps to performing arts athletes, and just really to help us to build that demographic of people that we're reaching out to. So we'll talk more about at the end. So if anyone's interest is piqued, more will come with that later. But first, we just want to talk to you, Chrissy, about your sidelined story. and specifically as kind of going into that, talk about a little bit about just sideline athletes as and dancers. I mean, a lot of dancers don't think of themselves as athletes, or, you know, we call them performing arts athletes, and we really do see them as just a specific type of athlete. How similar, you know, you work with both because of the work that you do day in, day out. Like, how similar are their transitions when they're forced to discontinue for medical reasons?
Yeah, this is a great question. I have to say, you know, the fundamental experience of transitioning when they're, you know, forced to, is very similar, right? Because it's that, it's a transition in and of itself, but it's that whole identity piece. Both athletes and performing artists are typically entrenched, you know, in what they're doing, and it becomes so much a part of them and their lifestyle and their purpose, that that experience is very, very similar. And typically what I notice that's a little bit different about performing arts athletes is just the added emphasis, and I'm speaking mostly about dancers here because that's mainly who I've worked with thus far and, you know, my background, is the emphasis on the aesthetic of their physique and the fact that so much of what you do in dance, you're being like judged for how your body moves and how it looks, you know what I mean, from an artistic standpoint. So there's that added pressure if they get sidelined due to pain or an injury or some sort of medical reason where they can't move as much. Not only is it just difficult to transition out of being able to perform, but the added pressure to maintain this image that's so deeply ingrained within them to look a certain way is so, you know, it's just a whole other layer of the transition. So I feel like that's a really big differentiation between the two groups, although as a whole, the transition and all of the experience is very parallel.
Right. Yeah, that's an interesting take on that because it's not something necessarily that I would think of, but it makes perfect sense that just that idea of just your physical body and the way that you're supposed to be as a dancer and how impossible that really is to maintain, especially if you're injured and you can no longer spend 2 or 3 hours or 4 hours or whatever it is at your craft and doing those types of things. So I can see how, you know, your body would just change and gravitate towards different, you know, it's just not going to be the same, and just how that would also play into identity and just kind of that personal, your personal acceptance of the state of things, the state of your, you know, the life. So thanks
right.
for sharing.
And yeah, of course. And just to add a little bit is just, you know, if you think about it, and some, you know, athletes who aren't in the performing arts may not realize, like, dancers oftentimes spend, first of all, a ton of time training, right? As do other athletes, but staring in a mirror at themselves and at other people in, you know, very tight clothing, because that's, you know, they're moving around and working out. And so it's just, unfortunately, it's a part of the whole dynamic of being a dancer, which is its own thing. But then when you get sidelined, that, like you said, that identity piece that's tied up in that, is a really big block to navigate. I personally, it was a big part of my personal story and the people who I work with. So that's just the main theme I notice.
All right. It sounds like you and I have some work to do on, maybe we'll make some other resources available that specifically address that, because I feel like that's its own topic that we could spend a lot of time on and I think could be really, really beneficial. So we'll shelf that Absolutely. For another project coming up later. Let's get started with your story. Obviously, dance was a huge part of your life. For you personally, like, what did it mean to you growing up? Like, I know you kind of alluded to it already, but is there anything else you would say as far as what dance meant to you on a personal, emotional kind of level?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it ran very deep for me. I think that many athletes, performing arts or not, can relate to this, in that it meant belonging to me. You know, as human beings, we're hardwired for connection. And so, you know, that core human need for connection and certainty, dance provided that. It was somewhere I went consistently and knew that I was going to be supported and cheered on and challenged and pushed. And I felt like I belonged somewhere. And I think we're all in life outside of athletics or within athletics are looking for somewhere to belong. And not somewhere to conform to, but somewhere where you can show up as your truest self. Mm-hmm. And I think that that was something that dance did for me right away. And the other piece of it truly was, you know, I don't even know if I told you this in the past, Christine, but I was diagnosed with juvenile rheumatoid arthritis when I was younger, when I was 8 years old. And So I, and like I said, I was dancing since I was two, right? And so I was incredibly fatigued. I had pain constantly in my wrists and my ankles. And I, you know, had to be pulled out of school all the time for excessive blood work. I had to take these pills every day. It was really traumatic at the time. And yet I never stopped dancing. And the doctors even recommended, like, if she wants to do it, like, don't pull her out. And I never let it go. And I would sometimes come out of class crying. And my mom would be like, do you still want to do it? And I'd say yes. And it was almost like dance was a lifeline at the time when I didn't even realize that it was. Mm-hmm. And I think, again, for that sense of feeling like I belonged and that I could do something that felt good and felt like I was showing up as my truest sense of self, even at that young age. That was dance for me.
Yeah. And so you ended up going to college specifically for dance and were, you know, achieving your goals with the dance team. And then the injury happened. Tell us about, you know, what that was like, when that happened in college, and just kind of the replications of that.
Sure. So I think it's important to start by just saying that I had never been injured before. So I headed into college after all those years of dancing. I headed into college with this, you know, underlying tone of invincibility. Like I, you know, you would see people getting injured here and there along the way, and you'd always kind of be like, not me, you know? So all of a sudden, it was halfway through my dance career at Michigan, at the beginning of my junior year, where I did this one move, I'll never forget it, in the middle of my dance class. And I just felt sort of like a popping or like ripping sensation in my hip. And it was weird because after that, I was like, well, what was that? But I could totally walk on it. I could dance on it. It wasn't painful in the moment. And I was like, all right, that was weird, but keep going. So after that day, the pain just sort of grew and grew and grew. And I went and got it, you know, checked out. It was misdiagnosed for literally 2 years. I was seeking professionals who were telling me it's a groin pull, it's a hip flexor strain, it's tendonitis in your hip flexor, you know, all of these different things that it could be in that area. But we never really hit it on the head. So since we never had a definitive answer, I just kept dancing on it because, like I said earlier, it was my major in college, and I was on the dance team there, which meant so much to me. And that was my main community and best group of friends. So I was like, if anyone is going to tell me that I can keep dancing on this, then I'm going to keep dancing on this. So I kind of pushed through it for 2 years. It was really rough. A lot went on mentally during those 2 years, which we can touch on later. But it wasn't until I graduated and sought professional guidance in New York City that finally was diagnosed properly as a hip labral tear. Mm-hmm. And honestly, I feel like I'm hearing of this injury more and more by the day. I feel like it's getting, more people are getting diagnosed. It's actually incredible how many people have this injury, athlete mm-hmm. and not athlete. So it was properly diagnosed, and, you know, they were like, you're in this position where, you know, my labrum was torn off the bone, my hip structure wow. had it so that my bone would keep impinging on it if I didn't get it shaved. So they were like, pretty much surgery is your best bet here. And at the time I was like, sign me up for whatever. If you said I needed a hip replacement, I would do it. You know, I was at that point where I was like, whatever needs to happen to get rid of this pain, sign me up, because I just can't continue on this way. So I ended up getting surgery soon thereafter. And then that kind of led into my whole journey of sort of the rehab after surgery and handling chronic pain.
Yeah. Did you expect your dance career to continue after surgery?
You know, And I'm sure a lot of other athletes can relate to this, because I've spoken to many and people have a similar feeling. When you are a committed high-level athlete in college, or even maybe in high school, and then you stop after high school, but you kind of get to this point where you are pushed so hard that you kind of feel burnt out by the end of the experience. Mm-hmm. And so to be honest, with how much I was putting on myself in college between my major and the dance team, and I was choreographing plays at Michigan. Like, I was just, it was everything, right? Mm-hmm. And so I, by the end of that experience, with the pain that I had for those 2 years, I was like, I needed to take a step away. Mm-hmm. Like, I was okay with taking a step away and doing what I needed to do for my body, because I was like, that was a really rough last 2 years. I can't really look at dance right now, because right now it feels like dance is associated with pain, and that's really upsetting to me right now. Mm-hmm. And so when I went into surgery, I was like at peace with at least not doing it anytime soon. Mm-hmm. But then once I started going into my recovery, I started to teach a little bit, like, you know what, I try to start to like reintroduce myself back into it through teaching, and, you know, soon came to realize that teaching and having my pain only just reminded me of how much I missed dance and how much I wasn't able to do. And mm-hmm. I had to remove myself again from mm-hmm. from the situation. So, right.
Yeah, I think that makes a lot of sense for some. It really just depends on the person. I mean, whether getting back involved through an alternate avenue quickly is a good idea or not is really up to the athlete. And sometimes you just don't know until you start. And sometimes it's the kind of hurt where you can work through it. And sometimes it's the kind of hurt where you're just like, why am I torturing myself? This is not the same as competing. Until I can like let go of that, all this is doing is reminding me of what I can't do myself. And then like for Cade, that's how it was for my son Cade, who was sidelined through from a heart condition. Mm-hmm. He didn't want anything to do with basketball for a long time. Mm-hmm. And it was a big transition. We didn't watch basketball in the house anymore. We didn't watch March Madness because it was just too painful. But eventually for him, it was a couple years later. It was something he was able to return to in a different way with student coaching. And he got, you know, all those feelings back. And he had, I think, done the internal work where it was now okay. And fun to re-enter that sphere. So I think it's important for our listeners to understand, if, you know, there's like a whole host of possibilities there of like how that's going to feel, if it's going to be the right move for you or not. And you just don't know until you try. Or if you do know ahead of time that you're just not ready, then stand firm in that. Like, that is okay. And you can always revisit it down the road. But sometimes you just have to put yourself in a space where you can move towards healing rather than just constantly feeling like there's someone scratching at your wound.
Right. That's a really good way of putting it. And, you know, I love that you mentioned that and about Cade's personal story, because, you know, if it's reassuring to anybody who's listening, like I said, I had to step away completely, you know, go through rehab. I went back to it, still wasn't ready. My internal work had not been done yet. And we'll get into that too. But just for, you know, an encouraging note is I'm now getting back into dancing, like now. And this is like 7+, you know, years after the initial injury. So everyone's timeline looks a little bit different. And, you know, I'm going back into it with like a completely different mindset now. You know, my priorities back then for dance are like not even close to them now. And now I can appreciate dance for just a way that, you know, I can express myself and makes me feel, you know, like my best self. So that's such a great point, in that everyone's timeline looks a little bit differently, but stepping away from it is actually, you know, it's not your weak, it's not your giving up, you know, it's actually a really strong thing to do.
Totally. And another point to that is never letting anyone else or the pressure that they put on you determine how okay you are with it. Because I remember specifically that people would try to fix the situation, to fix his emotional, you know, condition by offering suggestions of what he should do and what he should get involved in. And it was just like, honestly, it wasn't very helpful. But I just like to tell the athletes out there, like, it's your voice and your voice alone that matters in that. And it's fine if people make suggestions, but they don't know what you're going through. And it's not up to you to prove anything to them. Like, you have to know what's helpful to you and what's not, and navigate through that for yourself. And certainly people can help like talk you through that, but nobody can tell you how to feel through that. So anyway, I don't know. I'm just a big advocate for people finding their own voice and really pushing aside external pressures to, you know, have it go any certain way.
100%.
So let's talk a little bit about, you talked a little bit about your kind of emotional journey on that side of things. Talk about the physical. I know this was a really interesting component of your, you know, transitional journey that I wanted to talk about, because you had a significant experience, should we say, with pain and after the surgeries or surgery. Tell us a little bit about your journey with pain management and your recovery, because I think a lot of athletes are going through simultaneously the emotional transition as well as the physical. For Cade, that wasn't the story. He didn't have anything physical to work through. So tell us a little bit about that journey.
Absolutely. So, you know, transitioning, like we were talking about earlier, out of sports or out of, you know, dance or performing art is hard in and of itself, right? Like that's a whole transition in and of itself. But then dealing with the ongoing aftermath of prolonged pain, or like, you know, an injury that comes and goes, or, you know, any kind of medical condition that sort of prolonged, is a completely different layer of complexity to the whole process. And so, you know, just to paint the picture a little bit, I mean, I got surgery. I spent that whole next year, you know, really committing to my rehab in the midst of my grad program, with doing physical therapy consistently, trying alternate modalities. And, you know, a year later, I'm like, what's going on? Like, I'm still experiencing this pain. And so, you know, sought specialists' attention, did a whole other year of PT. And mind you, during this, like, I would go to visit my friends in New York City, and I would have to sit after walking two blocks and cry, like, hysterically, that I couldn't, like, get from point A to point B. And I went to Spain with my family because my sister was studying abroad, and we were climbing up, like, not even that steep of a hill to get to the top of this site. And my brother and my dad, like, had my arms on either side, like, taking the weight out of my hips so that I could, like, get up. And, you know, I would choose not to go out to dinner with friends sometimes because of the pain from prolonged sitting, or even, you know, just depending on where my emotional state was that day. So this was like all encompassing, right? And in the back of my mind during that whole process was like, my goal was to be pain free. Like that was my expectation for myself. So anything that didn't come close to that was, you know, a disappointment and was not satisfying, and just created more and more turmoil inside, if that makes sense. And so because pain-free was my goal, I was living my life on pause. Like it was like, I will live my life when, you know, the pain is gone, I'm able to do this again. Like I had this whole checklist in my mind of what life needed to look like. And that was kind of what was guiding my inner voice, what was guiding my actions. Because, you know, your thoughts and beliefs control your actions. So it was just this cyclical process that was keeping me stuck, and I didn't even know it. So basically, I alluded to a little bit, but even beyond those 2 years, I sought out every opinion and every option on the market for pain. I mean, from physical therapy, multiple different physical therapists with different approaches, acupuncture, acupressure, cortisone injections, Marcaine injections, massage therapy, like absolutely everything that was there, because I was so convinced that the way to get to where I wanted to be was outside of myself. And because I thought it was outside of myself, it increased my frustration and depression, and it lowered the action I took toward doing anything positive for myself. So essentially, you know, after all that time and after 20 plus professionals, it took my mom saying, you know, in her loving, caring way, that it was all in my head. And I'm like, don't you dare tell me that this pain is all in my head, right? Like, don't even go there, right? Like, there's no way. And what she was getting at and what the heart of it was is go figure out the mental side of this whole entire thing and see where it can take you. And I have to say, I'm kind of astonished, and this is what fires me up, if you can't tell already, is that with the 20 plus professionals I saw from like a medical model perspective, not a single one like ever alluded to the fact that my mindset could be playing a big role in my pain and how I was reinforcing it in my body. Like mm-hmm. that was not even a concept introduced to me.
Right.
So long story short, I, you know, was like, you know what? I think it's time. I'm ready to seek out a sports psychologist. You know, they understand the demands of a sport, but have that background in psychology to sort of help me process through this. And that was really the turning point of my entire story. And it was short. It's not like, you know, psychology for it to work needs to be a certain length of time. It was a, you know, small period of time that I went and saw him. But what it did was it started getting me to shift my expectations, shift from like, how do I solve this pain to how do I thrive despite this pain? Mm-hmm. And once I got to like the root cause, which was like I just said, the kind of stories and the expectations and the like internal blueprint that I had for what life was supposed to look like. Once I started to shift all of that, I'm not even kidding. Like my pain dropped like significantly. Wow. It's like, I'm like at a loss for words sometimes when I talk about it, because that was the last place I would have gone. And you know, everyone's always saying, you know, it's all in your mindset. Life is how you perceive it. And it all just kind of feels like in one ear and out the other. But mm-hmm. when you actually find somebody who can guide you through like research-backed, effective, proven tools to rewire your mindset so that you're actually able to get to where you want to be, you know, despite what you're going through right now, it's completely life-changing, you know?
Right. This is also interesting to me because I know there is that risk of telling an athlete what your mom told you and it not flying over, like, oh my gosh, why don't you shut the heck up and, you know, like, I'm going to punch you in the face. Like, honestly, if that was
pretty much
me in that situation, that would be my mindset. So obviously leaning into that a little bit, that possibility and exploring that in and of itself is kind of a walk of faith. Like you have to, mm-hmm. I'm sure that that is, I bet that wasn't easy, but I applaud you for pursuing that. And I'm sure at that point you're like, well, I tried everything else, but.
Well, right. Exactly. And to your point, like, yeah. And I want to emphasize that to whoever's listening is that I did not then go to the psychologist being like, oh yeah, like, you know what, this is going to be it. This is the answer. Like, absolutely. I had a huge dose of skepticism. I was like, what are the odds that like this pain right. isn't as real as like it's seeming, right? Because it is so real. Like it's debilitating. And I was like, there's no way this is like a part of my mind. But after going to, and this was a chain of events, so I don't want to just say it was one thing. It was going to see the psychologist and starting to think about things differently. It was, mm-hmm. Going and pursuing further education after my OT degree in lifestyle redesign, which is, they do a lot of work on lifestyle redesign for people with chronic pain and chronic illnesses. And so learning like deeply about how pain works in your brain and your body and what's actually going on and how it can get disrupted when pain becomes chronic. I was like, oh my God, this whole time I was blaming myself through this experience by being like, you didn't go to acupuncture for long enough. You did the PT mm-hmm. exercises too many times. You know, didn't take a rest day that day that you should have. You walked too far with your friends that day in the city. And it always came down on me to feeling like things could work, but I was always getting in the way of like seeing them through or like having them work effectively. Mm-hmm. And learning that pain science was like, oh, such like a weight off my shoulders being like, wow, there's so much more to this that I now know I can be somewhat in control of. But that was happening outside of my control in a way, right. You know?
Man, this, I feel like I need to go like research because now you have my interest piqued. Is it called, is that what biofeedback is like where you're kind of talking to your brain and the your body? I don't know if that's the right term or not. Do you know what the right term for this kind of mindset work is?
Yeah, I know what you mean. So there are multiple different, you know, approaches within just the sphere of like neuroscience and, you know, mindset, but biofeedback is like a technique that you use to learn to control some of your like body's functions, right? To like slow down your heart rate, you know, change different okay. things. It's using a lot of like feeling into your body somatically. So that is totally one technique. But it was even just like, And this is like the astonishing thing. It was like, before I even tried any techniques or like strategies, the education in and of itself of like what's going on in terms of like, the only reason pain exists is it's a threat. It's a threat. Like it perceives there's a threat, right? Mm-hmm. So even like long after, like with chronic pain, this is what happens with people with low back pain where they go get MRIs and they're like, nothing's really wrong, but their back pain is so debilitating. They're like, what do you mean? Like the brain has come to believe, because of beliefs you have, because of underlying thoughts you have, that there is a really true threat. Mm-hmm. And so you have to go in there and yes, there are like research backed ways and strategies to untangle and break up that cycle, because it becomes habitual. Mm-hmm. It becomes habitual and you don't even know on a subconscious level you're reinforcing it. And so learning that that's even something that, you know, scientists found to be true was such, it completely altered the trajectory of my recovery process and now to where I am now, like yeah. Entirely. So.
Man, that is so intriguing. I totally want to unpeel that, but we don't have the time for that today, but I did want you to share about that because I felt like that is something that oftentimes we just don't think about. So if someone is listening who has, you know, some major, you know, chronic pain going on because of their recovery, and they're very interested in learning more about, you know, the science behind the mindset work that you can do, where would you direct them?
It's a really good question. So there are a lot of different resources and there are so many different like pathways you can take in terms of learning more about it, but then also just becoming, you know, maybe proficient in some of the methods. So these are things that are used across like mainly science-based professions. So psychology, even some physical therapists, occupational therapists, any kind of medical professional, but a lot of like lifestyle related medicine. But really where I would point them is like looking into some of the specific techniques and seeing just the research behind it. So I would say, like, to your point, like biofeedback, brain mapping. My brain is like going crazy trying to think of all the different ones. Mm-hmm. Just like neurofeedback. I would start with like where I began too, was sort of just like pain management related to neuroscience. Mm-hmm. And you're gonna open up a whole can of worms on just like where it'll take you. I mean, Google, the internet's a wonderful thing. It'll take you to like really credible sites and sources where you can just learn more about that feedback process and sort of what's going on from a neuroscience perspective that has an impact on your pain.
Right. And the sports psychologist you saw, did they specialize in this, or do you think any sports psychologist would potentially have this kind of, you know, tool in their repertoire?
Yeah, no. So actually, my sports psychologist really, he took a more traditional psychology related route with me, in the sense that we did a lot of, like trauma-informed processing, in the sense that we were talking about like my past and just like, you know, thoughts that I grew up believing, and just, you know, and trauma I'm using lightly because trauma doesn't have to be like you were physically hurt mm-hmm. or anything like that. It's just the way that your environment had an impact on you and how that's reinforcing your beliefs and thought processes now, which I feel like a lot of athletes come from that very like, you know, type A, really go-getter, committed like 110% into everything kind of thing. And that can sometimes lead to that spiraling sort of, when you get into a situation where you get hurt or something happens that you don't expect and it's disruptive to your life, it can really, if you have that type of personality, it can be a kind of a downward spiral a little bit in terms of what happens after that. Like, I can just share a little bit of my story so this makes a little bit more sense. Is like, you know, when I first got injured in college, you know, being the person I am, I told you I did field hockey and dance at the same time, doing a million things always at the same time. When I was sort of like at a crossroads of, okay, how do I take care of my body if I can't move as much as I want to? I mean, I began to overcompensate by restricting my eating. I began to overcompensate by doing a lot of like cross training that wasn't impact related, but like too far, you know what I mean? Because I just was so worried and I had that like, okay, I'll commit myself to anything that I feel like is going to make everything okay. And so I don't even know how I got on this tangent. I am so sorry, but I am just kind of trailing off. But
yeah,
I think that,
no.
There's so much here. There's so much here about like who you are. But yes, back to your point is like, sports psychologists, you can look and see, they'll usually say on their sites or, you know, where they work, what they kind of specialize in, the different tools. But a lot of this that helped me again with the education was getting further training in lifestyle redesign and just chronic pain education, which you can find, you know, if you look into that subset of you know, training.
That's helpful. Sometimes just knowing what to search for and who to look for is key. So I wanted to make sure I asked that, because clearly there's a whole lot that you could get into, but there's just not the time for. And I think it's a really valuable thing for people to know that there is something more to look into. So thanks for that. So couple more last questions here. We're gonna talk about what you currently do and like how you are working to help athletes and dancers alike. But before we do that, can you just maybe reflect more generally overall and think back maybe to that time when, you know, you were sidelined and you were really struggling with, you know, just this loss that you had? Like, what advice would you give specifically to yourself back then, or maybe any performing arts athlete who is struggling with the loss of dance?
Really quickly, before I answer that, I just wanted to let you know that now that I had a second, a name did pop into my mind that I think would be a really good resource, and I just don't want to let it go without letting everybody know. Is just, if you're looking just for education that you can easily access, Dr. John E. Sarno is professor of rehabilitation medicine at NYU School of Medicine, and he's a physician. He has multiple books out that are all about this mind-body connection when it comes to pain and illness. It's honestly mind-blowing, his work, and the work that he's done, where he's literally had people come to him where they've had back pain for years, they've gone through surgeries, you know, from other physicians' recommendations, and their back pain isn't gone, and he takes them through this process that's literally mindset-based, and their pain disappears. And this isn't like woo-woo, like I'm trying to, you know, say like, go seek him out and like this thing will magically cure you. It's not something like that. But this research that goes into the mindset related, and not mind, even mindset, like mindset, but also your past, like all the stuff that's inside of you, your blueprint, and how it relates to the way pain or illness shows up in your life. He dissects it so far. So he has like this amazing book called Healing Back Pain or The Divided Mind. I highly recommend looking into John Sarno's work. So I just wanted to say that.
That's a great tip. Perfect. Thank you.
Yeah, no worries. So you asked about advice that I would give to somebody, you know, either to my past self or somebody who's in my shoes. And so, you know, a few things come to mind. One being that, you know, your experience that you're going through now and how you're going through it is not a reflection or, you know, of how great you are as a person or how strong you are. We already know that if you're an athlete and you're a performing arts athlete, you have so much mental toughness and you are a warrior at heart, because it is not for the faint of heart to get into things like that. But, you know, this whole experience is not meant to be toughed through alone. Mm-hmm. And I can tell you how much of my experience I spent, like, yes, I was seeking other professionals' advice and guidance, but I tried to like manage it all myself, because I was like, I can get through this. Like, I'm tough. I got it. And that was always kind of my mindset growing up, was like, I can handle what's thrown at me. And so there's like really three components that I always come back to overcome like this deeper layer that may be going on underneath the surface of where you're at. One of them just being, you know, number one, mentor, like we were saying before, somebody who gets the experience and who's not just going to offer sympathy, but that's going to offer empathy and guidance to your next step. Because if they know the road ahead, why spend the 7 years that I took, right? Like in and out and up and down and all over before I could finally get to the root cause. So like I told you, going to that psychologist was like the very pivotal moment that sort of shifted everything. And ever since, I've been investing in coaches and just mentors and resources that have really just changed my life since then. So that's one. And then the second is really just having a structure, usually offered through that process, being like, a process to work through. So sometimes you just feel like, where's up, where's down? Like, where do I even begin in this entire thing? And it helps when you understand that there are like mechanisms you can go through and work through to get to the other side. Mm-hmm. And the third thing was that, you know, your thoughts directly equal your quality of life. And it's not, and I want to say that because it was such a pivotal moment for me when I realized the way that subconsciously my thoughts were reinforcing the way I was being, which I alluded to before. But I kind of like to leave people with this quote that came from Janine Shepherd. She has a very fascinating story. I won't get into it, but definitely look her up. She was sidelined as an athlete, hugely, like was told she wasn't going to be able to walk again, and she became a pilot, and she's walking to this day. It was, you know, to once she had the audacity to let go of the life that she thought she had to live, like a whole new world of possibilities opened up for her, you know? And that's kind of what I was saying before, is I had such a clear expectation of what I felt like was a life worth living. And the pain, if anything, was just a mechanism that brought to light some of my inflexible and just narrow views I had about what life should be and what life needed to look like. And so if anything, I always just say, like, this pain or this medical thing that you're going through is really, really difficult, but I promise you it's a mechanism that's going to teach you so much more about yourself and what maybe was not serving you before, but just couldn't mm-hmm. come to light because you were just getting through it. You know, you were just mm-hmm. going through life sort of unknowingly. So those are like the biggest points that I feel like would have really changed my life had I known them sooner.
Right. A mentor, some structure, and, kind of that thought process on the quality of life and moving forward with like even just redefining what success looks like and how it's going to look differently in the future and, you know, what makes you you. So that is really, really good. So tell me what you think about like Sideline USA as what can we offer performing arts athletes? What can they find from our resources or our connection from your perspective?
Absolutely. Sidelined USA, first and foremost, which I think is incredible, is that it offers a community of people who get it, you know,
right.
For lack of a better term. All I wanted at the time during my transition and my whole experience was someone to say, I get it, you're not alone, and here's where to start, you know? And Sidelined USA offers so much more than that, but I'm just saying from the fundamental level, just that community piece, which often is a big part of the transition as well when you're not either a part of a team anymore or, you know, surrounded by like-minded people who are in that sport or that art. It's really difficult. And finally, you can find a community who's sharing in the experience with you and maybe either a few steps ahead or a few steps behind that you can collaborate with and support. So it's just an incredible resource in that regard. And I think, you know, the other piece of it is the resources that Sidelined USA offers to reintegrate. So whether it's going back and becoming a part of the sport or the art that you no longer can participate in the same way, or just finding the next place to begin, because going back and becoming an occupational therapist was super fulfilling for me because the demands of the master's program mimicked demands of achieving in my dance, you know, career. And I felt connected to this degree that explored health and wellness and physicality of the body in a whole new way. So it tapped into some of those things that I really loved within the sphere of dance, but just in another realm where I was like, oh, wow, like I'm more outside of the dancer. I can still tap into interests and things I love that are beyond just that. And that is exactly, you know, what Sideline USA does for sidelined athletes. I think it's incredible.
Oh, well, thanks. And likewise, I know you're doing that community building yourself. I love, as soon as I heard about what you're doing with your company, because I was introduced to you by someone, a professional athlete, tell us more about your Life Mind kind of redesign coaching company, what you do, how you help individuals, and where people can find you.
Absolutely. So Like I said before, my background is as an occupational therapist, but I'm now a life and mind redesign coach, which I feel like really embodies what I do with people. I help, as you said, sidelined performers, athletes, and high achievers who were sidelined from what they love to do and are looking for a way forward, which is why I so deeply resonate with what Sidelined USA is doing.
Yeah.
But so from my perspective, what I'm doing is it's online coaching. So it's really accessible for people anywhere and everywhere that resonate with the work that I do. And I help essentially these sidelined athletes, performers, or high achievers figure out what is, like I said before, that root cause of what's really going on that's disrupting the way life is right now, right? We can all point fingers at like the obvious, whether it's a diagnosis or the pain or the experience, which is so valid in and of itself. But what underneath it all, right? It was like my blueprint of my mindset and of my thoughts that was really getting in the way of me working through it to the best of my ability and moving forward in a way that I could experience life the way I wanted to. And so I help people through getting to that actual root. And then the second piece of that is like, okay, now what? So once we get the root cause, what do we do now? And it's like, you know, looking at how you're redefining your identity, you're redesigning your lifestyle, because your lifestyle is not going to look exactly the same, but that doesn't mean it's any lesser than it was before. And helping people realign their purpose in life, because so many of us athletes felt like that was our purpose. You know, it took up so much of our time and our energy and our heart that you don't even know where to begin to be like, who am I outside of Chrissy the dancer, you know, right. Joey the blah, you know, whatever you were, it's so much a part of you now. What do you do? And this is another piece that I really want to make sure I say, and that I love about Sidelined USA too, is that if I had to narrow like it down to one thing that really like took it home beyond the mindset stuff for me, what really started to change the way I started going through my life after I started to do the mindset work was finding my next passion in life. Mm-hmm. And this is what Sidelined USA does, is they give you the resources to really find whether that's going to be reintegrating into the sport or the art form again, or whether that's finding just a new passion that's going to make you feel alive again. The thing is, the feeling of significance is a core human need. It's you can look Tony Robbins, he's the 6 core human needs. One of them is significance, and it's one of the most powerful ones. And I feel like that's one that comes with the territory of being an athlete or being a performing arts athlete, because you feel like that sense of accomplishment. You're working towards something and it pays off, and you're learning and you're growing and you're getting that validation. And so we all need that in life somewhere. And it came from, you know, dance or your sport for us. Where is that going to come from now?
Right.
And so I really help people get to the heart of what that is for them next. Because once I started figuring that out, even with this whole coaching thing, I mean, my pain was like a non-factor in my day-to-day, which was out of my realm of even possibility, because now I had something that was like firing me up and showing me that there was like my life beyond and an identity beyond what I even thought for myself. So
right.
That's in a really big nutshell what I do with the people I work with.
Which, yeah, is so fantastic. And there's so much there to not only work through, but to work towards. And I love that from what I'm hearing from you is that you really help them do both. You help them work through their current kind of emotional state and identifying certain things that will help be, shed some light on what's going to help them propel forward and where are they going to look for kind of replacing some of those core needs in whatever's next for them. So thank you so much for the work that you do. I'm excited that you are a resource that is available out there and can kind of one-on-one really help athletes and performing arts, you know, athletes, dancers, to be able to work through those things. So what is your website and social media tags?
Absolutely. So it's just www.chrissypapetti.com. Social media is @ChrissyPapetti. So pretty straightforward. You can find me there. And I always say, like, I love just connecting with, you know, former athletes of any walk of life, just to talk about this whole experience. So I will always, you know, open up that dialogue, would love to have a conversation with anybody who resonated with any piece of this or has any kind of question. I'm super open to that. And I'll be a part of the Sidelined USA family, so I won't be too far. You can always find me. But yeah, I really look forward to connecting with more athletes out there.
Awesome. Thank you so much. And yeah, Christy is also someone is part of our Sideline Athletes closed Facebook group. So if you're on Facebook, or even if you're not, go ahead and just get on it, even for just this, and search for groups, Sidelined Athletes. And it's just any kind of athletes who have had to, you know, leave their sport due to medical reasons, and we're there for each other. And Christy's one of those people that you can reach out to and just, you know, share your story. And, you know, there's a host of a whole group of athletes who understand what you're going through and can give you some encouragement, and understand where you're coming from. So Christy, this conversation has been awesome. I can't wait to build more resources, for both. I feel like you hit on three major topics. One is just performing arts and, you know, the unique transitions of dancers, as well as that physical, those physical pain management type of strategies, as well as just this mindset work on the what's next and the kind of changing the trajectory of from healing and just those the kind of that going through the grief process to now having some kind of forward movement, which doesn't have to happen right away, but at some point there needs to be kind of some forward movement. And you have brought to light a lot of good points regarding all three things. So thank you so much for your time with us today, and we'll look forward to building more resources for our listeners together.
Absolutely. Thanks so much for having me.